the cannabis industry is evolving at a radical pace, progressing toward the green peak. Each week, join Richard Zwicky, a cannabis visionary and entrepreneur, as he interviews experts from around the globe to discuss updates and evolutions in the world of cannabis. Let's make that climb together up the green peak with your host, Richard Zwicky.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today on The Green Peak. I'm Richard Zwicky, CEO of Plana Global, and today we have Cody Sanchez. To our listeners, Cody Sanchez is Managing Director of Entourage Effect Capital. Cody, Entourage recently came into being as a name, previously known as Cresco Capital Partners, and also announced the raising of a Fund 3, I believe it is. Tell us about the new fund and how it's going to build on prior iterations.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. This fund is our fourth fund once we combined the two companies that we had previously, were Cresco Capital and MacArthur. So we now sit at about, you know, just around $140 million in assets under management. We are going to continue the same strategy that we've really had in the most recent fund, which was CCP. Previously branded, which kind of has a bifurcated focus. Essentially, here's how we see the universe in cannabis today. We see the universe on one hand being a generational wealth creation opportunity that is going to have implications across industry, everything from pharma to biotech to consumer packaged goods to beverage. On the other hand, we see a market today which has seen a lot of distress. We see a really, beaten up public stock market. We see companies having to raise at lower valuations. And so we see kind of unique entry point into a double-digit growth industry that has, really sort of normalized in a period where everything else is trading at all-time highs. So the strategy is going to be take advantage of these two disparate things happening in the cannabis universe. On one hand, accelerate and support incredible companies within the cannabis landscape that are on the growth equity side with very strong management teams and a high level of due diligence. And on the other, look for opportunistic distressed opportunities where we are able to add on companies to current companies we have at more interesting valuations, do turnarounds, and do changes of management teams.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so, taking a step back to how you got there, I understand you were an award-winning journalist prior to entering the space, and the impact of cannabis, as you touched upon, is a generational wealth creation, but also is going to have an incredible social impact on society as a whole, be it patients or the community around it. And it's Plana. My company, Plana, is a provider and a producer down in LATAM, shipping around the world, as you know. And of course, our impact involves the communities around us in a different way than just patients. When you're looking at the companies you're dealing with, how many of them are actually have a mindset of how are they impacting the community beyond the patients straight up? From a day-to-day involvement, because obviously with your background, that's got to be part of your mindset.
Absolutely. Well, one, we've been very impressed with what we've seen from Plana thus far, having a little bit of a unique insight into that. So congrats on your success. It's not an easy endeavor in any startup, more or less in cannabis across emerging markets. But I would say that these days, the market has changed a little bit for companies. Consumers, especially in the US, are more and more interested in companies that are purpose-driven. And we see that across the board. I mean, the originals being companies like Patagonia, et cetera. But in cannabis, companies like Harborside and, let's say even Acreage leading the front on legalization. So I think it's an important part of any brand's identity if you're actually going to have a moat around their business and not just be a race to the bottom commodity. And it's a tough art that we haven't seen all companies do incredibly well, especially when they don't have a lot of extra cash on hand.
Absolutely. And, it's got to be mindful of how that cash on hand gets used, but at the same time as understanding the communities we all operate in. And that actually leads me to, we're seeing in different areas of the world, we see the different applications. And of course, Canada, we started off with medical only. And in the last year, October 17 of last year, we had recreational adult use become legal. And of course, the US on a state-by-state patchwork has followed a different path. But as an investment perspective, how are you seeing the preferences and how are you looking at the market with regards to adult use versus medical and the opportunities for entrepreneurs and investors?
Well, I think that these markets are increasingly coming together. We're moving from medical or recreational to more of a wellness, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, from our perspective, we have some companies that we invest in that are very traditionally, let's say medical, but increasingly we're looking at companies that span it, companies that are nutraceuticals in a way. And so, you know, if we're investing in a company like, let's say, NorCal, which we have exposure to, that is a vertically integrated company, which has, you know, recreational products, but also has products like balms and creams and tinctures for varying ales and ailments. So I think the market is really not a tale of two cities. I think it is increasingly one big metropolitan area that is going to have a lot of crossover.
Yeah, and I fundamentally agree with you. And I think we can't get pigeonholed from the perspective of one or the other on so many levels. The international trade, of course, of cannabis is controlled goods trade, just like many other narcotics. But then it becomes a question of how it gets used within each country, meaning the trade internationally and the shipping internationally may be governed by the UN treaties. But then in country, where does the line from wellness to OTC to prescription use varies dramatically? And of course, you, as everybody else, sees the coming advent of, you know, people talk about cannabis 2.0, but then 3.0, and you know, all these monikers start getting lost. But as we start hitting beer, energy drinks, and bifurcating the market from a recreational perspective, which very clearly from topicals, balms, tinctures, the market becomes more confusing on some levels, but simpler in certain areas as well. It becomes simpler from a supply perspective in that there's more channels open, but more difficult from regulators. And how do you see, you know, the US is a patchwork. How do you see that evolving over the next 18 months, a patchwork and relative to the rest of the world?
Yeah, 18 months will be a really interesting timeline, I think, because none of us have a crystal ball. I certainly don't, or I'd be sitting on my yacht today. but I do think that one of the parts that seems likely from our perspective is that we have some sort of alleviation bill from a business perspective in cannabis. And so we've already seen the banking, Safe Banking Act go through Congress. I'm not positive that it will go through make it through the Senate by any stretch of the imagination, but I would be hard pressed to imagine that there is no additional bill from a national level put forth in the next 12 to 18 months. I think it's most likely that it is not a legalization, but something like safe banking, something that addresses 280E. But I think the best resources that I have to go for that are MPP, the Marijuana Policy Project, and the Cannabis Trade Federation. They are literally sitting with legislators both in states and in Washington, D.C., where I sit, on a weekly basis. And so I try to not guesstimate too much, not being consistently in front of regulators, and instead leverage them.
Yeah, and so the Safe Banking Act, I mean, obviously that's on the forefront of a lot of people's minds, but we've seen actually a dramatic increase quarterly in the number of banks and financial institutions which are already handling cannabis and companies over the last few months. And how big, those are state by state operations. And I think we've seen about a 25% increase in the last two quarters in relative numbers on credit unions and banks in various states that are handling transactions. You know, one of the interesting numbers I came across last week is, you know, the in California, there were 5,500 approximately applications for licenses for companies or individuals and companies that wanted to enter the cannabis space as production. There's been about 500 or so, about 10% of the applications become successful. The remaining 90%, you know, that's a huge black hole in the market that is going to have to be brought forward at some point. Is that the SAFE Banking Act that's going to break down a lot of that barrier and legitimizing that area of the business? Because that's a huge tax loss for governments everywhere, because those producers probably haven't stopped. Yeah. How do you see that? You know, all that money, what happens to the cannabis economy and the economy in general as it gets legitimized?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, California, for instance, is $100 million in the hole, or they're missing $100 million from tax revenue related to cannabis, largely attributed to the black market. So California being one of the biggest cannabis markets, I think is an interesting microcosm to what's happening around the U.S. And, you know, the problem is when you tax cannabis at effectively a 75% to 80% tax rate, it makes perfect sense why there's a black market, because you're able to get goods that are perhaps 100% cheaper than they are from a legal standpoint. So no doubt about it, when we take off some of these tax burdens, the consumer is going to feel relief, the black market is going to shrink, in my opinion, and that will have some of those holes closed from a tax perspective. I don't know if banking changes it. I really think what we have to do is address 280E, which is the US tax code that mandates that cannabis businesses essentially can do no write-offs in their business. And so until we remedy that, I think you're going to have a still very sizable black market, because consumers are unwilling to pay those kind of dollar differences.
Absolutely. And consumers are always going, you know, consumers are always going to make the choices about which product they're going to choose. And of course, we see lately with the issues around vaping and the queries, that casts a pall on certain aspects of the industry. But more and more information keeps coming forward that the medical community is bringing and looking at, that it's not actually the contents, it's more the storage containers, because a lot of containers for the vaping have had metallic compounds in them, as opposed to pure glass. They haven't been the tested products, they've been the black market products. And, you know, one of the big opportunities for government in legitimizing the trade and bring tax forward is also increasing the amount of testing. As a group and from an investment perspective, how much time do you spend, and how much time do you think investors and venture capitalists and participants in the industry should be spending around looking at that, you know, the long-term liabilities, but also the opportunity around the safest, most compliant products to market? And how does that factor into the discussions around the table?
It's such a great question. I mean, we get into this business certainly for profitability, but absolutely with purpose also. And so the last thing that I would ever personally invest in would be something that I thought was dangerous to consumers. One, it doesn't make good business sense. And two, we have to keep our humanity foremost. And so I was just at a panel yesterday in New York talking about this exact same thing. And I felt like I was giving kind of a public service announcement here, basically saying, if you are a user of vapes, here are sort of the five or six different things that you should think about in order to keep yourself and your family safe in as far as we know it today, you know, largely led by the fact that you need to make sure you're not buying anything counterfeit and go to legal dispensaries in order to get product. But I think it's huge. I mean, we just had one of our portfolio companies, Akerna, announced a partnership with Solo Sciences to add their counterfeiting technology on all of their products. We are seeing an uptick in demand from companies like Akerna, which is MJ Freeway, to have compliance tracking from seed to sale and to ensure that you can essentially trace every single product from the moment that it is grown to harvested, to put into product, to take into the dispensary, to who was the actual end consumer that got it. And so, for instance, if we had had, you know, MJ Freeway's technology, when we were all going through, if you guys remember, like the iceberg lettuce scare, where you couldn't eat lettuce for a while because it had E. coli on it. If we had had their technology on the lettuce industry, we would have been able to, same day, figure out exactly where the outbreak came from and go and remedy it. And so how amazing if we can have that inside of cannabis as well. And maybe even cannabis could be a leader for food safety overall.
Well, that's fantastic. And I'd like to come back to that a bit more after the break, which we have to take for a moment. And we're going to continue back with Cody Sanchez from Entourage Effect Capital in a moment.
The Green Peak will climb back into your podcast player after we play some messages from our sponsors.
Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoggies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat.
Climbing our way up, up, up to the Cannabis Summit of Success. Cannabis Radio is back with more of the Green Peak.
All right, and we're back with Cody Sanchez from Entourage Effect Capital. And Cody, we just before the break, we touched upon the technology aspects and tracking and how that's going to tie into from a compliance perspective. And I know, you know, at Plena, we faced the same problem in terms of looking at how do we manage this? And in our case, we're dealing with, you know, hundreds of thousands of plants and through the various stages of growth and very quickly going to millions actually right now, which is an interesting problem for many businesses. My background prior to the cannabis industry was in technology, dealing with large-scale databases and analytics and the like. And one of the things we recognized was not just a state-by-state or in Canada province-by-province jurisdictional patchwork, but also we had to deal with international ones where we have to track this, the stock plants or mothers, which a lot of people refer to them as, to the seed, and then outwards each one of the stocks into the production, so that as we deal with extract, we have to understand exactly which plants went into the every single batch of extract from a traceability perspective, and reporting to that across multiple jurisdictional lines, because of course we produce in Colombia and soon in Peru and elsewhere around the world, but then ship to customers across Europe, Canada, and Asia. these tracking technologies that occur, as you mentioned, in provenance tracking occurs in many other industries. How do you see the cannabis industry different from a producer of fruit or vegetable from the organic space that's being shipped around the world in terms of the level of sophistication, and where are the big regulatory gaps that are needed to be addressed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I'm curious as to your experience, not to turn the question on the question and asker, but
happy to do that.
but you know, we obviously aren't cultivators, and we aren't operating in these markets. So from my perspective, it seems reasonable to me that given that Colombia, for instance, right now is the largest producer of flowers globally, that yeah, why wouldn't that same thing apply to cannabis? I have an inherent bias because I've worked in Latin America for so long that I know many challenges come therein, especially with something that was formerly illicit. But I'd be curious on your perspective, having been firsthand on the ground in those regions.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and that's a thing a lot of people overlook as they're approaching the market, and people throw terms around, which gets frustrating because we see a lot of people talking about, you know, GMP compliant and EUG compliant, as if it's they get the certification automatically, and that tracking is just a, you know, we can fill in the paperwork and deal with it whenever, as opposed to understanding the level of sophistication. The way we approach it is, you know, if we have a customer in Canada or a customer in Europe who's manufacturing a tincture, and those bottles of tincture are going to end up on shelves of dozens of pharmacies across the UK, Germany, France, wherever. We are able to report back if there's a single bottle that somebody wants to know the provenance and the origin, which 20 plants or 50 plants ended up in that bottle, and where they came from in the facility and how they moved around the facility through the entire growth process. And we need to know that not just from a regulatory perspective. We actually want to know about that also from the perspective of an optimization and understanding of the production value, because we produce multiple strains. We have 550 different varietals registered in Colombia, which is a huge database for a seed bank. But we need to know and understand and optimize our growth cycles for the right plants to produce at the right times of the year to meet client demands. Because every time you take a plant and change where it's growing, it ends up expressing a different mix of cannabinoids. And all the environmental factors that go into that have to be tracked and understood, but also so that as we're producing medicine on behalf of patients, patients need to know that the medicines they're receiving month after month have a certainty in terms of formulation that they're getting the same thing. Because if you're a patient with epilepsy or Parkinson's or, you know, a skin condition like psoriasis, and you find something that works, you need to know you're getting exactly the same thing the next month. And so tracking ties in understanding really the outcome for patients so that you're able to ensure that the patients that are using the product, and I'll use, you know, I think patients have to be looked at from the perspective of all anybody that's in not just a prescription, but a wellness, nutraceutical, anything to which there's a direct benefit, meaningful benefit. You know, it's like I don't take, you know, there's multiple headache pills on the market. There's Tylenol, there's Advil, there's aspirin. They don't all work for everybody all the time. And you need to understand what works for you at the right time. But understanding that and truly understanding what do monikers like JCP, GMP, EUGMP matter. And that's part of where I think we look at the market, and I hope that is an educational process, which, you know, your firm, I know in terms of diligence and asking questions, asks about. And a lot of, you know, that's a level of sophistication that firms need to aspire to, I believe, as they're entering the world market. When you speak to your potential investments, how do you approach and look at their future forecasting, not just from a financial perspective, but where the market's going and how are they planning to adapt to where it's going to be, not where it was yesterday?
It's a great question. I mean, typically you first take the projections and cut them in half because, as we all know, we entrepreneurs need to be a little bit crazy to achieve anything that we set our minds to. And it is crazy to think one can be successful in business, not to mention cannabis. And so there's some inherent euphoria in the numbers. So the first thing that we do is stress test those. And so our model is typically cutting those back anywhere from 50 to 75% to look at worst case scenarios. And the second thing that we do is, you know, really numbers are just a derivative of underlying assumptions. And so we really dig into how did you get to these metrics and are these reasonable and who else has actually hit these metrics within that set amount of time. For instance, I don't think I know very many dispensaries that have gotten all the licenses that they need, gotten their construction done, and opened their doors all on time. It just really doesn't happen. There's always a little bit of a delay, whether it's to the licensing process, to the official construction being done, or the opening staffing and outfitting of the store in time for their expected launch date. And so as an investor, your job is to look at everything that an entrepreneur is telling you with a little bit of a jaded eye. And the only reason that we're doing that is because once we invest in the company, it really is a marriage, which is a cliche. But, you know, our most recent fund target, fund life date is a 7-year fund. And so you can imagine, you know, the average marriage in the U.S. lasts 5 years. So we plan on being with our entrepreneurs for some time, which means that the best thing that you can do to not be disappointed by somebody is to set your expectations properly up front. So that would be the most important part for entrepreneurs. Maybe also I would say, try to not use the words, these numbers are conservative, because that's become a little bit of a cliche to investors. I think it's best to say, these numbers are extremely diligently achieved. And here is how we have actually come to quantify these numbers. Please look at our assumptions so you can determine if you think the numbers are rational or not. And right. Investors love that because we're quants.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true in terms of the perspective and the sharing. Everybody does tend to throw around a lot of terminology in this industry, thinking it's what people want to hear. And I think we see a lot of that in general, and people get in trouble for it. And I think we've just been emerging from the whole Cantra scandal in Canada. And it was nice to see the news of that cleaning, you know, starting to clean up more and more. How do you, the companies you work with, how do you prepare them around some of those missteps? Do you get involved in coaching or framing some of that for them to keep them out of those problems, or on a board level, or is there, how active do you become?
Sure. Well, I think you've probably seen this from us up front also. I think the toughest thing that we do is at the beginning of the relationship. And it's a little bit hard to do at the beginning because we don't know the companies as much. So there can be a feeling of us setting difficult terms, or you know, not getting on board as quickly as an entrepreneur would like. But the reason why that is so important is because once we have committed to a portfolio company, we have a motto of whatever it takes. So whatever it takes for this company to be successful, we are going to do everything that we can to not wait for success or an exit opportunity for our companies, but to orchestrate it. And if we have that kind of mentality, we have to be very careful about who we onboard, because we can't do whatever it takes for everybody. And so the companies that Cresco, formerly Cresco, Entourage Effect Capital does invest in.
It's hard to adjust. Don't worry, everybody. Everybody does that. I don't know how people change their names and then adjust it overnight.
Can you imagine, right? But the whole point for us is sort of, once we make that arrangement, once we put the ring on it, then we're on board. So we've absolutely had companies come to us, I would say almost every company we've ever invested in, and say, this isn't going the way we thought it. We need more money faster. We need, you know, help raising here. We need help with this exit strategy. We thought this company was going to buy us and they didn't. And that is all completely normal. And we help handle it. By then we have invested in you and we have your back. And so There's not going to be anyone from our perspective that is more valuable on your cap table than we are.
Well, and that's excellent. That's a great attitude to have with every one of the firms and partners that everybody works with. And with that, we're going to take another quick break and then coming back again with Cody Sanchez from Entourage Effect Capital.
The Green Peak will climb back into your podcast player after we play some messages from our sponsors.
Welcome to Cannabis Confidential. I'm your host, Dr. Dina. We've got David Faustino on the line, Bud Bundy from Married with Children. Did you feel nervous being a celebrity walking into a weed store?
I don't remember at all being like, ooh, I'm scared someone's going to take my picture here.
What are they going to say? Bud Bundy smokes bud? I mean, come on.
It wouldn't be a big shocker. Hey, this is David Faustino, and I'm on Cannabis Confidential with my girl Dr. Dina on CannabisRadio.com.
Oh, lady marijuana, llama, tell you something now. Bought a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put the big celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Himping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proved by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me on crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Fetch your earbuds and stay tuned for some pure pet care conversation.
Hi, it's Angela Ardolino with It's a Dog's Life, and I have Hernanda Umana joining me. We're just both so fascinated with how much we've learned since we've been in this pet industry and creating an all-natural product.
Because it's a dog's life.
I am a huge fan of my guest today, Dr. Bob Goldstein.
I have, in my experience, not seen many natural substances produce the results that CBD is producing in the animals that we are testing on.
It's a Dog's Life with Angela Ardolino, only on Cannabis Radio.
Climbing our way up, up, up to the Cannabis Summit of Success. Cannabis Radio is back with more of the Green Peak.
All right, and we're back with Cody Sanchez from Entourage Effect Capital. And Cody, in the last few days, there's been some reports on like CNN about MedMen's bid to become the largest cannabis company, not being as successful as some would have hoped when their planned PharmaCann acquisition fell through. They were recently valued at almost $700 million, and today that's a fraction thereof. You know, it's in one sense, it's a distressed asset on the market. You've got others that are, as we mentioned a moment ago, CanTrust, which is a distressed asset. There's a number of others which have taken a beating recently. That's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity for companies like ourselves who have some in the bank, but growth perspective, but also from an investor perspective. How do you look at those opportunities, not just as an investment, but as pieces of a puzzle to bring more value to your portfolio?
This couldn't be more timely. I mean, we're seeing it across markets overall, even with, you know, WeWork, Uber, Peloton. The public markets are taking a bit of a beating for recent IPOs. And MedMen's not that dissimilar. So from our perspective, we've sort of been gearing up for this moment. We think that money is largely made on the price that you pay for an asset. And so this is an interesting market for investors who are willing to invest money in a generational wealth creation opportunity, but at a period in which there's actually an interesting value entry point. So for me, the market is rationalizing. I mean, it's completely irrational that we would be trading at 20 times multiples of, let's say, 2020 forward-looking earnings. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And so now we're having the market rationalize, which will be really beneficial for those companies that have enough capital on their balance sheet, that are focused on bottom line growth, profitability, and actually running a business as opposed to continuously raising to burn cash. And so from our perspective, as a private investor, which is what we are, It helps normalize valuations for private companies so we can get in at better valuation stages. And it shakes out for us who are the real players in this space. I mean, if you look at the biggest private equity firms that are out there today, Blackstone, KKR, for instance, they made a majority of their money after the 2008 financial crisis by investing when other people were fearful. So I think this market is really interesting. It's not going to hurt the long-term trend. Vices on average are actually up slightly in a recession. It's simply, do investors follow the herd or do they not?
Yeah, no, and that's very good. And I think we're seeing a shift from the evangelistic investor to a more sophisticated one. And you know, you mentioned, you know, the lunacy of people bidding against 2020 or 2021 forward-looking revenues. And I think the part that's difficult is for the, you know, the evangelistic investor, that's one thing because they're investing in where the industry's going. And even if they don't get that full 20 times, they're still going to do well. But now we're into the place where those companies actually have performance and harvests and ability to ship product, which previously and even recently, so many companies have been missing their targets. And that's, of course, had a damper effect on the market as a whole. And how, I mean, you see different news from companies at different stages. The public companies, of course, have struggled with some of their projections, which were made a little bit euphorically and early and aren't lining up today. We're, you know, we're fortunate we're in a different boat. We're private. And we've had our harvests and our numbers are coming in actually well ahead of where we expected, which is a nice envious position to be in, but it's not common. What percentage of companies are you seeing that even, you know, in the private side that are really reworking all of their forecasts carefully, that they're recognizing, hey, the euphoria is over and we have to get realistic, that maybe weren't, and how many of them were actually realistic as private companies to the potential?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I haven't thought about what the percentage was that was reasonable. I just know that we've invested in 40 companies in the space, and we've been very thoughtful about valuation throughout this entire process. Thankfully, a couple of our other partners are distressed by background and value investors. And so there are certainly companies out there that get it. And the wonderful thing for those companies is they're having a great time raising. I mean, for instance, we have a company, Urban Leaf, that we invested in, which is a dispensary grouping of businesses located in California and in Nevada. And they came out with an extremely reasonable raise for a $50 million raise amidst all of this turmoil and raised without a problem. And the reason why is because they worked with their leads and they came up with terms that actually made sense for their real 2019 revenue. And just similar to you, they've hit all of the additional dispensary openings that they said that they were going to hit. But these guys are, this isn't their first rodeo. You know, they've built multiple businesses, retail and real estate businesses as well, which this is not too dissimilar from. And so they get it. You know, they've seen this before. What I think this flushes out is a lot of the quick, easy money. So I would say of late, I mean, we get thousands of decks a year. I think we pass on 98% of the decks that we see, maybe even 99%. And a lot of it is due to either valuation or them not being real venture businesses. Instead, they're more lifestyle-like businesses or small businesses. And simultaneously with that, not having the experience to actually run the business.
Yeah, and you know, that brings up an interesting point, which can be at the very close, you see 1,000 decks come into you, which are already in some degrees filtered by an introducer. And then you've got only a few that you have the time to review in depth. Investor who comes in to meet with you, what's the thing that most of them don't think about or never really get right in their presentations? Because a lot of people, you know, people get an overwhelming story and they don't know how to filter it down. Do you see the single biggest thing entrepreneurs could work on when they come in to present to you guys?
So first you got to get in the door, right? So typically I think the biggest issue is we get a lot of cold emails and we really don't respond to cold emails very often from entrepreneurs because listen, with LinkedIn today, you're 2 to 3 connections away from anybody on the planet. And so I want to know that you are creative enough to leverage those connections to get to me. So let's say you get past my email, you get connected to me with somebody else that I know, and you could come on to actually present out to us. The first thing is, don't talk about the size of the cannabis market. If you're speaking with a cannabis private equity or venture firm, we already know the size of the market. Now, you could talk about a size of a bizarre individualistic market or a very state-specific market that we might not know, but skip over that. And I would say the very first thing that you should focus on is probably your team, which is not normal. People talk about the idea first. I think you could give one overarching slide of we're creating the white claw of cannabis, or we're creating, you know, the way to onboard soccer moms into the cannabis space through an edible. Here's the team that we're actually doing it with, and then get into your nitty gritty, because your business plan is going to change. Your forecasts are going to get missed. Regulations are going to change. And we're really betting on, are you the guys that are going to be able to take it to the next level? Because if you aren't the guys, then it's a turnaround situation and valuations look much different.
Well, thank you, Cody, for joining us today. And for any of the listeners who want to learn a bit more, you should visit Entourage Effect Capital's website. And of course, that's also available through the Cresco Capital Partners site, which is directing into it for now, and will continue to be part of their history and legacy going forward as a very active participant in the community. Thank you, Cody.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast. Great questions. You got me thinking.
All right. Have a great day.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.